comedy show.
Oh, I see. And we have our own radio station in Sarajevo.
Not
or it's
radio
independent.
Station.
Who runs the station?
Some guy who's from Social Democratic Party, so they finance him, and also UNESCO finance him. So.
Oh, I see. So what's your, you have a show on the radio station?
Yes, I'm working on that radio.
Okay, so you're an employee of the company.
Yes.
And what's your job there?
I'm working like an editor of the program and like a musical editor also.
Okay.
So I'm using that to spread Krishna consciousness.
Okay, good. You married?
No.
Oh, okay.
And also, I just wrote a letter to my Guru Maharaj. I hope he will accept me.
Good, good. Who is that?
Indrajyotna Maharaj.
Oh, wonderful. You just met him recently?
Yes, in Sarajevo.
When he came through Sarajevo?
Yes. Actually, they had some problems in Sarajevo.
I know. Yes. I think they got some bad advice.
Yes.
They shouldn't have taken out a kirtan party during Ramadan on Friday.
Well, it was Friday, and they was passing through the street in old part of town, which is very, very heavy now.
I think it was a mistake.
Yes, big mistake.
They were asking for trouble.
Yes, I was there also with camera, so I was recording everything.
Oh, gosh.
So
you got everything on camera, huh?
Yes.
And still the police didn't do anything, huh?
No, they just threatened me a little bit.
Oh, they threatened you?
Yes, to not publish that, but anyway, we published and it was...
They got in trouble, huh?
Yeah.
They were under the heat of public pressure.
Yes, and it was...
Looked bad for them.
Good commercial for us.
Yeah.
Because
people felt some sympathy.
Yes. And also they were on the festival on India, of India, in big numbers.
Oh.
It was good.
Okay.
So, I asked for this interview because I also made interviews with Sachinanda Maharaj and Smita Krishna Maharaj and also with Sarva Bhavana Prabhu.
Okay.
So, if you want to talk of anything, I mean, anything what you want to talk about, it will be the best thing, because we're not doing a usual interview with questions and, you know, and this is like, more like some talk, you know. Because I don't have anything to say, and you have too much to say. We can arrange, we can agree about subject, of our conversation, but it has to be most your talk.
I see. Well, that's certainly not a standard interview format.
Yeah.
In that way, you could just take a lecture tape and...
But I wanted to talk with you about Prabhupada Centennial. And actually, okay. I wanted you to talk about Prabhupada Centennial. Because
Centennial?
Yes, because everybody told me that you can do it the best.
Well, there's Lokana Swami who could do the best. You could get a tape from him. Okay.
If you want.
Okay.
So you may say...
Okay.
There's no need to do that.
All right, so Indira
okay.
has asked me to speak something about Srila Prabhupada's centennial here at the Hula summer camp for congregational members. And Indira is working at a radio station in Sarajevo, and so she wants her listeners to hear something about Srila Prabhupada's centennial. Of course, everybody has a centennial because time is like that. But we celebrate the centennial of personalities like Srila Prabhupada, even though he's not presently with us in the flesh, but what he accomplished in his life is such a major contribution to society, and especially personally to us, that we feel indebted to him, and we want to find any excuse to glorify him and to worship him. The biggest mistake that we made as disciples of Srila Prabhupada was to not let the world know about the great soul who walked among us. We were very young, we were immature.
And
we didn't really realize to that extent what a great personality he was, and in his own humility he didn't push himself forward. He always made people aware of Krishna, and he always pointed people to Krishna and invited people to surrender to Krishna, presenting himself as simply a humble servant, once in Indore, in India. Prabhupada was with one of our life members, one of the life members of ISKCON, and Prabhupada was staying at the house of another life member, and people were coming to meet him, so Prabhupada had a nice talk with this gentleman, and Prabhupada was speaking on a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmane Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Swapake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. A sage, a learned person, sees with equal vision an elephant, a dog, a dog eater, a brahmana. He sees everyone equally because he sees the oneness of the soul. Ekatvam anupasyataha. So after the discussion, the man got up to leave, and then he turned to Prabhupada and he said, "Swamiji, are you God?" And Prabhupada was silent for a moment, and then he said, "No." He became very grave, and he said, "No, I'm not God. I am a servant of God." Then Prabhupada again paused for a few moments, and then he said, "Actually, I'm not even a servant of God. A servant of God is a very great thing, but I'm trying to become a servant of God." So Srila Prabhupada was always so humble, and we accepted that humility, and we shouldn't have. We should have, although Prabhupada wanted it to be the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but we should have let people know about Prabhupada, the messenger of God. In time, people will come to know about him. It's always posthumously that in any field some person gets recognition after his death, but in this case, of course, such a spiritual personality will have and make an impression or have an impact, to use a very trite expression, but Prabhupada will definitely have an impact on the course of humanity. He will become known in time as a divine preacher who saved the world from destruction. There is a revolution going on all over the world. Srila Prabhupada's teachings are so sublime and pure that people who receive them and realize them, they spontaneously want to give it to others, and in that way it's growing and growing and growing. And someday people will, Prabhupada will be publicly recognized. But in this year, we want to take the opportunity to do whatever humble glorification we can and tell people about Srila Prabhupada. It is necessary that we do this. We want to do it out of some feeling of love. And in order for us to become more and more enthusiastic, we have to do this. The whole secret to success in spiritual life is to worship Krishna's devotee in all of the scriptures. It is explained that it's more important to worship the devotee than to directly try and worship God. God is more pleased when you worship his devotee. So we need to do that for our own progress. I suppose the development of the centennial has been taking place over the last 4 years or more. It was a responsibility that was enthusiastically taken up by Lokanath Swami, and we had a committee, and Lokanath Swami was to lead the charge, as it were, but we had a committee and we all advised him and encouraged him and supported him. But it took a long time, 4 years, to build up the momentum, because many devotees feel that ISKCON is always having a marathon. Seems like we're always working 24 hours a day to do more and more. So what more can we do for Prabhupada's centennial? There's that kind of feeling there. So to actually get people to go beyond, to transcend their normal level of marathon, to have a super marathon, takes a lot of inspirational preaching and cajoling and pushing and encouraging and begging. And so Lokanath Swami rose to the task. He had a number of disciples who, and his disciples grew over the last 4 years. People became inspired by his preaching. And he engaged all of his disciples and all of his funds in promoting the centennial, and he developed an office in Delhi. There were about 32 devotees at one time there living in the centennial office, and they were just focused on promoting the arrangements for the centennial. I can say with some satisfaction that I gave him some very specific advice, which he eventually took to heart. He was trying to involve devotees in the temples to extend themselves farther in terms of time and money, and to put on the centennial. And he was having a difficult time because, as I said, everybody was already using every penny available for Prabhupada's service, and they were already working overtime and with less staff and whatever. So I had advised him that I don't think you should even try to make a big push within the temples, but rather you should look to the congregation and empower them to take up this work, because it's something that they'll like to do, and not being fully engaged in devotional service, they'll probably take it as a great privilege. And he did do that eventually, and a lot of the work of planning and organizing was eventually done by congregational devotees all over the world. And then as the momentum got built up, as the momentum built up and it was accelerated more and more, even the leaders became excited about the whole thing as the time narrowed down to the beginning of the centennial. The temples got all inspired. He did also another thing that I encouraged him, and that was he made a lot of propaganda. There's a principle in marketing. If you want to be successful in spiritual life, then surprisingly enough, you have to use a fire to fight fire, or you have to use even material things to promote your spiritual cause. Therefore, marketing or advertising skills can be used to promote the message of the Lord. And one of those principles is do 10% and advertise 90%, rather than most people who do 90% and then only advertise 10%. Nobody knows what you're doing and nobody gets inspired. So anyway, he started putting out magazines. Now I think he has 3 or 4. There's Prabhupada Toshini, and there's Centennial Magazine, and this and that. And lots of flyers and messages on Calm and this and that. And so people just really got enlivened about the prospect. And that was a dynamic that worked very successfully. And so now here we are in the middle of the centennial year, and a lot of very good things have happened. I know in Bombay, in December, we had a gathering. We rented a stadium, and it had a capacity of about 35,000 people. We didn't know how many people we were going to get, but we made a lot of propaganda, invited a lot of people to come and glorify Prabhupada, and to our amazement, we got over 40,000 people come and stayed for 3 hours, and everybody took prasadam, everybody got a full plate of prasadam, and it was just very, very ecstatic to see 40,000 people chanting and glorifying Srila Prabhupada. So that was a good start, and many other wonderful things have happened around the world since that time, and there are many more things scheduled to happen in the rest of the year. And as I said, it's an opportunity. The centennial, it will only come once in our lives, unless we take birth again and celebrate the second centennial, but I wouldn't advise that. I suppose my message is more for those who are followers of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, but it's also a message to those who are looking for spiritual guidance, that here is a man who had such a wonderful heart. He had such deep compassion and love that he gave everything at the fag end of his life. He gave all of his energy, he gave all of his time and all of his knowledge to preaching Krishna consciousness, and he made such a wonderful contribution because of his good qualities, his purity. And if you're looking for spiritual light, spiritual guidance, then you should definitely take advantage of the opportunity to get some of Srila Prabhupada's books and apply your reason and your intelligence to these books with an open mind. And there are many, many people around you who are studying these books and who will be more than happy to testify that you will get great benefit by reading these books. They're like gold, actually. And as soon as you discover that the gold is there, you'll want to read all the books. And you'll want to meet that man, Srila Prabhupada. Although, unfortunately, you can't meet him now, but you can have his association by associating with his disciples and by reading his books and hearing his tapes, and there are many cassettes of his lectures, etc. So he is still living with us, and I guess you can tell the quality of a man by how he inspires others to live a good life. And I think if you examine the devotees of the Lord and see how they're how they are committed, what the level of their commitment, the intensity of their commitment, you'll wonder what it is that is driving them, pushing them to such a standard of devotion. And it's really not a question of fanaticism, because we give much more emphasis to philosophy, and this is not a sentimental religious movement. It's a spiritual, cultural, and educational movement. And what has inspired people are the teachings and the personal example of this very wonderful person, Srila Prabhupada. So the centennial is, just an intense year, and we certainly hope that people will be fortunate enough who otherwise would not have heard about Srila Prabhupada, will get the opportunity, and we certainly hope that they'll benefit by coming closer to him. He who tells that Vaishnavas die reasons ill. Srila Prabhupada is living still in sound, and his disciples living try to spread his holy name around. That's our raison d'etre right now. We're living, breathing, working, associating only for the purpose of giving you a chance to associate with Prabhupada, with this pure devotee of Krishna. You can just imagine in 2,000 years the influence that a pure devotee had in Jerusalem in 2,000 years ago, and what the impact was even up to today. Well, such a transcendental personality has only just recently walked amongst us, and his presence is very fresh in the air, and so take advantage of it. Find out more about Prabhupada.
I have one question.
Yeah.
Many of the people comparing Srila Prabhupada with Jesus Christ. Please, can you tell us a little about Srila Prabhupada's mission here? And about that, what is the difference and what are the similarities between...
Well, of course, the differences are that Jesus Christ was... His message was... it was eclipsed. It was... he only gave a partial revelation of the absolute truth, because the people he was dealing with were very simple people, fishermen, shepherds, nomads, desert dwellers, and in fact they did have a difficulty in understanding him, because eventually they crucified him. And he said himself that I have many things to teach ye, but ye cannot bear it. Some of his best followers betrayed him at the most crucial hour. Whereas Lord Krishna spoke to the emperor of the world, Arjuna, and he spoke to many other leaders of society, and he didn't deal a lot with the sub-religious principles such as don't steal and don't covet thy neighbor's wife and property and don't do this and that. He immediately began to discuss philosophy. You are not the body. There are modes of material nature which bind you. The mind can conquer over the senses when it is trained by pure intelligence. And he gave a very practical process how we can be free from entanglement in the material world. So it's a question of difference in quality of the teaching. Both were pure devotees, both were preaching the message of God, but because the audience was different, the quality of the teaching was different. And Srila Prabhupada brought that same teaching to a Western world which is very skeptical, which is influenced heavily by mundane science, and a world which needs logic and reason. Just if you just go to people and preach that, you know, if you don't do this, you'll go to hell, then people are likely to say, well, I don't believe in your hell. I don't believe in your God. We can do everything you talk about with science. We make supermarkets, we have instant food, we have nice roads and cars, and we live to be 80 years now due to medicine and technology, whereas formerly people only lived to be 35 or 40. So your culture is archaic, it's relative. I can produce babies in test tubes. We don't need your God. So such a type of audience, if you don't bring them state-of-the-art spiritual technology, then they'll reject you just as being a sentimentalist and a fool. So that's why it's very necessary that people get this same message, but in a better presentation. It's the same message, love thy God with all thy heart and soul. That's the bottom line. But just as a dictionary, a pocket dictionary will have an abridged meaning or an abridged explanation of the word, whereas the larger international dictionary will have the same word but a more complete explanation. So that Srila Prabhupada is a pure devotee of Krishna. Lord Jesus Christ was a pure devotee of Krishna. But Christ was not able to give complete understanding.
Okay. I have also just one more question. Many of the people think that this process is some kind of in religious process.
Some kind of?
That we are not religious. That,
not?
We have, that we are sect. That we are not
religious. Cult.
Yeah.
You call sect.
Cult. Yeah. Secta.
We're not a cult, we're a culture. We go back over 5,000 years. I've lived in India for 25 years myself. And I have associated with the doyens of Indian industry. I've met the Prime Minister two or three times, Narasimha Rao. I've presented him with copies of our books. I've met ministers, members of parliament. I am president of a temple where we get 6,000-7,000 visitors a day. On Sunday we have 25,000-35,000 pilgrims come to our temple. On Krishna's birthday we have about 700,000-800,000 people come to our temple, and people who come and respect me and even worship me, and these are the Indians who are the top technologists at IBM. These are the Indians who are the doctors and lawyers and engineers of America. These are the people who are very smart and have a very ancient culture. And to say that we're a sect is just a manifestation of someone's complete lack of historical and cultural perspective. It means he's just a bigot and has no real knowledge of what he's talking about. I have personal experience. What can I say? For 25 years I've been living in India.
They have that problem. They can't accept that we are chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra and that we are in Kirtan and that we are so that we following four regular principles, but they can't accept the pictures or Sabujan Prasad.
Deity. Deity.
Yes.
They can't accept the deities?
Yes. And also the pictures of...
No, that's not true. It depends on who you're talking about, but they have their deities also. The Pope bows down. He has a staff. He carries a danda. He offers his obeisances before the deity of Mother Mary. And they worship Christ on a cross with nails in his hands and blood dripping down. Our deity is a little different. We worship God dancing. We worship God in a joyful mood. We worship God in a transcendental form. But they're also worshiping deities. The rituals are not that different. They may be slightly different because it's a little different culture. But really you should start judging by the result, not by the external form. Judge by the essence. How are people becoming free from lust, anger, and greed? How are the followers developing addiction for praising the name of the Lord? How are they developing the good qualities of devotees of the Lord? How are they losing their interest in material life? Why don't you use this yardstick for measuring, not your superficial, external, mundane comparison? This deity worship has been going on in India for thousands and thousands of years. And the sages and saints of India have produced the greatest body of philosophical knowledge and spiritual knowledge. And this is acknowledged by scholars and savants all over the world. Just like everybody knows, if you want to get a good degree in technology, you go to Harvard, Princeton, or Yale. Similarly, people know if you want deep philosophical spiritual life, you go to India. It's the oldest culture in the world. They're not in competition. You from Croatia can go to Harvard and get a good education. You don't have to be an American. You just have to absorb the knowledge. And similarly, you can understand God by studying the Vedic literatures, and it doesn't matter. You can be a Christian, a Hindu, or a Muslim, or whatever you like. You'll get benefit by studying these principles of spiritual life.
Okay, can I ask you one more question, and then we can finish?
Sure.
I wanted to ask you, you said we are not a cult, we are the culture. It's also Vedic society. What is the meaning of Vedic society, and what is the meaning of Vedic culture?
Well, Vedic society means a society based on the Vedas. The Vedas are a body of literature, scripture, which deal with knowledge in relationship to God. The Vedas were written down 5,000 years ago, but the essential knowledge was born along with the creation, which took place time immemorial ago. Vedic society, Vedic culture, Vedic literature includes the Upanishads, the Vedas, the Puranas, the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. There are many, many volumes of books, and all describing different features and aspects of God and His creation.
Maharaj, please, can you stop a little? Just have to.
Sure. How long has the tape been off?
1 hour.
No, it might have been off. It might have been stopped for the last 20 minutes.
No. This is good.
Okay. Yeah, so Vedic culture is... you see the last vestiges of Vedic culture in India today. The people wear saris because it's something that is there in Vedic culture, that ladies cover their body in this type of dress. Men wear dhoti and kurta and shave head because it's part of a culture that puts God in the center. The whole goal of Vedic music, Vedic medicine, Vedic art, Vedic business, is to realize God. And in fact, in Vedic society, the temple was often the center of the city, and it was a place where people gathered to discuss every aspect of their lives and get inspiration from the scripture. And we see that in other cultures also. In Judaic culture, the temple was also the center of commerce and industry and whatever. At least the temple was in the center, and around it were the different divisions of society: business people, mercantile people, farmers, and administrators and workers. And it very much modeled after Vedic culture. The Vedas are the oldest scriptures in the world known to man, and they're in Sanskrit language, which is the mother of all languages. And I haven't invented any of this. You can go to any college or whatever and learn the same thing. Vedas are very old. And we are studying the Vedas from a devotee's perspective. You might hear a different rendering of the Vedic culture from a mundane scholar based upon his whatever he's learned in his school. But what we're accepting is the knowledge that is in the Vedas itself, and we're coming in a tradition of teachers going back thousands of years. Teacher to disciple, teacher to student, going back and back. So this is where we get our reference from. Okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Did you want to say anything else?
Huh? No, I'm pretty tired.
I don't want to bother you anymore.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, when you don't ask questions, it's hard to give a very specific market-oriented answer. I just kind of got a little inspired. I was probably more speaking to devotees than to a radio audience, but I guess you'll cut and paste everything and come up with something.
They have to hear.
Huh?
They have to hear a few things.
Oh, okay.
And
sure.
They are not so bad. They love to listen to ourselves.
They love to listen to English?
Oh, we will translate.
Huh?
We will translate it.
Oh, I see. Oh, you'll play the English and then translate it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. About how much of your audience understands English?
Much. Pretty much.
40%?
50%.
50%? Yeah. Even in Sarajevo, huh? Sarajevo's a small place, right?
Yes. 300,000.
300,000. Now probably less.
Yes.
What's its historicity? What's its history?
Of Sarajevo.
Is it an ancient city?
Oh.
Does it have cultural importance?
Yes. Sarajevo was Austrian first. Turkish first. They built the Sarajevo.
Oh, they built Sarajevo.
Yes. But Austrians, they built more things than Turks, so it's a little
mixture
of two cultures. So we have mosques and churches and everything in one place. It's pretty small little town.
Who lives there?
Oh, before this war.
Mostly Muslims?
Yes, now mostly Muslims. But before this war, it was a mixture of Muslims and Serbs and Croats and Jews and everybody.
They were living together peacefully?
Yes.
They were. So politics created the war
before
and the trouble.
Yes, before this happened, everything was good. Nobody was attacking anybody.
Yeah.
It was good.
We're coexisting fairly well.
Yes.
But this was all created by politicians. Okay, good.
Thank you.
Thank you.